Now it's time for Young Widder Brown. The National Broadcasting Company now brings you Young Widder Brown, the story of attractive Ellen Brown with two fatherless children to support. The story of the age-old conflict between a mother's duty and a woman's heart.
Well, you've got your love theme and the title. They did everything but give you billing. They didn't say Florence Freeman in.
No, as a matter of fact, they reserved a reference to me, you know, as a full-fledged person. Only on those occasions when I was too ill to do the show. Then I would be mentioned kind of in reverse. They would thank the actress who was substituting for Florence Freeman, who was unable to be with us.
So, did you object to that?
I didn't object at all. It was the only time I got billing. You know, that was great. So, it's really amusing, though, to hear it now.
Isn't it? Yeah.
It's out of another world. So.
Well, it was another world, wasn't it?
It sure was.
Well, are you the original Young Widder Brown?
Oh, yes.
Well, when did it start?
It started, actually, not as Young Widder Brown, but as Young Widder Jones. And in the original version, it was a recorded show over, may I mention a network?
Mention anything, sure.
Over WOR.
That was Mutual then?
That was Mutual. We did 39 weeks of recordings, and that was in 1937, it must have been, yes. We had no idea when we made those records that the show would ever go live, that it would ever be successful. My major problem at that time was not, as George Ansbrough so professionally put it, the problem of a woman's duty against a woman's heart. It had nothing to do with that at all. My major problem as Young Widder Jones was a debt of $24, a debt which was actually referred to as a mortgage. And I had to find some means of paying that mortgage debt of $24. And it hung over
me.
For 39 weeks. It hung over me as an everlasting threat to my security and to the security of my children. My home was going to be taken from me. Well, it was a pretty sad state of affairs, is all I can tell you. At any rate, in order to meet the problem head on, I opened a bake shop, and through the good auspices of wonderfully warm-hearted neighbors and a dear, dear Uncle Josh, I finally met my obligations and was relieved of this tremendous burden.
And had your name changed.
Yes.
So why did they change the name?
Well, to tell you the truth, I don't know why. And really, I couldn't have cared less. When I got the call to say that Young Widder Jones was now to be Young Widder Brown and would be going live within a matter of weeks, I all but flipped, because the show was really, basically, so corny, so repetitious, so lacking in any kind of sophistication, that, frankly, I think no one in the cast even hoped that it would go live. However, it did. And though a good deal of the writing in the early years was pretty bad, eventually we did have a wonderful, wonderful writer. She, of course, did not have the authority to change the basic premise, which was, of course, a very false premise, that two kids could interfere that much in a mother's life as to prevent her from ever marrying. Of course, this was a thorn in Elizabeth's side all the time. However, if you will accept the fact that the basic premise was phony, and simply look at the scripts that she turned out, they were a joy and a delight. She had her name was Elizabeth Todd, and unfortunately, 2 years ago, she passed away. She had been a staff writer at NBC and then became a freelance writer. A fine, fine writer with a wonderful sense of comedy, with a tremendous understanding of children.
When did she come into the show?
Oh, I don't know exactly when. I would say, let's see, 38, 39. I would say she started to write the show about 42, 43, maybe.
How long was it on? When did it go off?
Well, I played the part 16 and a half years.
And you said it began in 37.
Didn't yeah. You? Well, now, when I say 16 and a half years, I'm not even sure that I'm counting that recorded year, you know.
Well, when you went live...
I stopped doing it. No, I guess I was counting that. Because I worked on the show through Thanksgiving 1953.
Uh-huh.
That was it.
When it went live, then did you move to NBC?
Oh, yes.
You
yes.
Did.
That was after the first 39 weeks.
Now, this wasn't a Hummert production, was
it?
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, it was. Frank and Ann Hummert.
Oh, yeah.
They really had everything, didn't they?
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah. Oh, it very definitely was a Frank and Ann Hummert production. You know, I didn't do it the last year that it was on.
Who did?
A girl whose first name was Wendy. And I'm not sure what her last name was.
Why did you leave it?
Well, I left by mutual consent.
As they say.
Yeah. I was very unhappy in it. They were really not permitting me to have a very happy life at the time. The Hummerts... felt that I no longer had that young quality. That they
right, and you
somehow
were a young widow.
Associated with the part. You see, while Elizabeth was writing the show, the children, Mark and Janie, grew in a normal manner, and that was part of the charm of the show. As I say, if you could overlook the basic premise, you could really enjoy a show which had a great deal of reality, a delightful, delightfully light quality, and was so true, was so charmingly true. You know, Mark would come in from school and full of vim and vigor and basketball practice, and, announce that Coach said, and go off on this thing about what Coach had said you know, was good for them, to eat and to drink and to think and all the rest of it. And, of course, Elizabeth was getting this from her own children. Actually, she had children of her own, and she knew children. She understood them, and it was really delightful. Well, suddenly, the Hummerts decided that with the title Young Widow Brown, it was important to keep Ellen young. Now, Ellen, of course, as the children grew older, became a more mature individual, and this was very much in keeping with my feeling about the part, Elizabeth, the writer's feeling about the part.
And with the natural process
the natural
of a human
process,
being.
Right. But the Hummerts decided that Ellen must remain young. And so I was called to do some pictures for publicity. And when I arrived at the photographer's, they had two models engaged as my children, a three-year-old and a five-year-old. Here they had been teenagers on the show. Janie was dating. And when I got to the photographer's studio, I had a Janie who was five and a Mark who was three. Well, I, of course, to the ears of the Hummerts, must have sounded like an old woman. And no matter how much effort I made to keep the character bright, I would not prostitute myself as an actress by pretending to be in my 20s when I wasn't. So we had a thing, you know. It was survival of the fittest, and I guess I wasn't fit. And so I left and/or was fired. You know, choose whichever you will. And for the last year that it was on, this other girl, Wendy something. I never knew her last name. At any rate, she played the part. And she was a very, very lovely little girl, you know. But we didn't see the part the same way. And that was that.
Did you, when you were doing it, did you always take it pretty seriously?
Did I take mm-hmm. the show seriously?
Yeah.
Well, I took my job seriously.
But
when I left the studio, I left as Florence Freeman, really. You know, I mean, it was very nice having the job, and the checks did come on Saturday. But I certainly never have permitted myself illusions about my own identity.
So you ran a tea room, Ellen Brown?
Yes, Ellen Brown's tea room.
In the early days,
as I say, it was... you know, I had a little bakery. But
in Simpsonville.
It became a team. Yes. Oh, yes. Yes, how nice of
was
you
that
bring
Midwest?
Me up to
yeah.
date. I've long since forgotten.
Was it the Middle West?
Good question.
Well, the reason I ask is someone said to me a couple of days ago, asked me what I was recording next, and I said I'm doing a program with Florence Freeman, who was Young Widder Brown. And he said, Young what? And I said, Young Widder Brown. And he said, Why Widder? And I said, well, that's the way they pronounce it in the Midwest, so I assume that's where Simpsonville was supposed to be.
Well, I don't really know. All I know is that the title was always, correctly, Young Widder Brown. That's what she was called.
And spelled W-I-D-D-E-R.
And spelled, yes, sir. Yeah. I remember taking a check... in one day, you know, on the check, in the voucher area, it would indicate what the check had been drawn for. Well, it was drawn for Young Widow Brown. And I handed it to the teller. who was sure it was misspelled, you know, that I'd better let them know at the office that they didn't know how to spell widow. But that is the way it was spelled.
Didn't you have a beau, Dr. Anthony Loring?
Oh, yes. But I had had another one before that. Oh, the story was a very interesting one. I had been engaged to another doctor. His name was Peter. Forgotten his last name. At any rate, Bud Collier played the part.
God rest his soul.
God rest his
lovely soul. Man.
Yes. And, I was engaged to him. It turned out in the course of the story that he was really married. But his wife was insane.
And one day,
a very unfortunate thing happened. His wife was released from the sanitarium and came directly to her home, her former home. And in the course of the broadcast, which covered the span of a day, a full day, 24 hours, the wife stayed under the same roof with Peter, the man I was engaged to. Had that having occurred, the Hummerts immediately had the character written out because it would impugn the purity of Ellen to be engaged to a man, one who was already married, and two, even were he to be released from this marriage, had openly spent the night under the same roof with another woman.
We've come a long way.
So, there you have it.
I have to think in the right direction, but...
That was the end of Peter.
What about Ellen Brown's husband now? Was he ever identified?
Oh,
what?
No.
Well, he was dead, but what had he been? Or did we ever find out anything about him?
No. There was a series, many, many years ago. I don't really remember it very accurately. Someone who pretended that he was Ellen's husband, that the death, I guess he must have been killed in the war, in World War I, maybe. I don't really know. I don't remember anymore what they said happened to him. Nobody ever talked about him.
It's like Helen Trent's
husband. There I was with the two kids.
Uh-huh.
And nobody ever referred to him. Even Ellen, you know, never in the course of approaching the children. You know, after all, children generally do have some knowledge of a father. But nobody ever talked about him.
Florence Freeman and I were talking a bit before we began recording about the years, I guess, would be during the 40s and during the 50s. And she had some rather interesting things to say, I think, about the blacklist, which is something we've discussed on this program, myself and some of the other actors, a number of times. How did you fare during those years?
Well, I was very unhappy about it. I was not one of the people...
Who were named.
Who were named. But I worked every day with people responsible for that list.
When were you first conscious that there was such a thing?
Well, we heard about it. Sort of indirectly in union meetings. And I was always part of, the liberal branch of AFRA. We had our own private little meetings. Years later, when I was doing another show not on NBC, on CBS, two actor friends turned writers were the writers of that show. And it was in their apartment that we used to meet, you know, in order to plan strategy to use in combating the right-wing elements within the Union. These things leaked out somehow. What was the list had a specific name. I've forgotten now what it was.
You're right, and I should know it, too, and I can't think of it.
I should know it.
The publication, I think, was Red Channels.
Red Channels. That was it. Red Channels. We knew about it very directly because of actors who were victims of it. For example, Everett Sloan suffered terrible, terrible personal hardship because of Red Channels. There was a period, a very long period, during which he couldn't get any kind of work. Nothing. He couldn't get a simple recording. No one would hire him. And there were agencies who did not agree with Red Channel, but who were, because of clients, forced to refrain from engaging people who were listed. I remember, I'm trying to think of the actor's name who decided to bring action against them. Well, unfortunately, I can't, and we don't have time to wait for me to recall, but there was at least one actor who planned very definitely to bring suit. And I think eventually did and was cleared. I think most of the people, as a matter of fact, responsible for the original publication finally met their comeuppance.
Too late, unfortunately, for many of the people in the careers.
Minerva Pius, for instance.
Yes.
Do you remember?
Sure, I know Minerva.
Do you?
Sure. She lives over here in a hotel.
Yeah,
but she never really came back again,
never,
you see.
Never
She
came
works
back.
Now once in a while, but she was one of the hottest comedians and actresses.
She was tremendous.
She can do baby dialogues, Russian
anything. Any dialect. Marvelous person. I was talking with my husband only a day or so ago about Minerva, during the war years, when she adopted a little Danish girl, you know. She was a foster parent. And I remember she took the trouble to learn Danish when the child was coming to this country. And she was going to have her with her. And she wanted to be able to communicate directly with no language barrier.
Yeah.
Between them.
As Herbert Biberman said to me once, he said, you know, it wasn't just that they were actors and actresses and writers and producers. They were among the best.
Oh, they were.
Nearly
wonderful.
All of them were among the best people.
They were.
His wife, Gail Sundegaard, Karen Morley, fine people.
I tell you, as I sit here, you know, I get all goosebumps when I think of the tragedies that they were responsible for, and the loss of dignity and the suffering of really, really fine people.
And how many of the actors and actresses who are still around, I suppose we shouldn't name them, who not only knuckled under, as did the agencies and the networks, but named names and took sides, and unfortunately took the sides of Red Channels.
Well, I suppose there were a great many.
You wonder how these people live with themselves.
I don't know.
They must know what they've done.
I don't know. It's hard to understand. But, well, you know as well as I do that so often people who tend to think along those lines provide their own blinders.
Yes, that's the horrifying part when I have spoken with some of them, and I have, because they've been on this program and have justified their actions. They feel that they were dead right.
Yes.
WBAI, New York.
So that you can't get through to them. You know, you can't reach them. And it's a lost cause. The only time that they're... You know, there is some satisfaction. Well, such a time comes, as it did to me when I had this visit out in California and Paul Stewart was bringing me up to date on all the things that were happening. My leading man on Young Winter Brown, Dr. Anthony Loring, was... I'm sorry to say, among the very active people and the extreme right wing of AFTRA. And although I certainly have no specific evidence that he was an informer, nevertheless, I would tend to believe that he may have been, since he was so violent on the subject.
We might as well tell us what he's doing now.
so far as I know, my last information was that he's selling real estate. Mm-hmm. So he's no longer acting.
Well, that's a good place to be selling it with Ronald Reagan running things.
Yes.
I suppose. Do you see many of the people you worked with on Young Winter Brown?
Do
you hear from them?
I don't, no. Not too many. Marilyn Erskine, of course, who was my daughter, Janie. And incidentally, she was the original, too. She started, she was only 10 years old.
Could you stay with it right through?
Yes. Until the children got so very young again, you know. But Marilyn, I think, is on the coast, and she is acting.
Frank Lovejoy used to be on the show, too, I think.
Yes, he used to play a part occasionally. Of course, Frank's passed away.
Alan Bunce?
Alan Bunce, as a matter of fact, played my leading man for a time.
He's passed away, too?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And Bud Collier, passed away. Martha Atwell, who directed the show.
You must come back sometime, Miss Freeman, and be Wendy Warren.
Oh, I'd love that.
I remember. Well, how long were you Wendy Warren?
Pardon?
How long were you...
I was Wendy for the life of the show. We were on the air just under 12 years.
I remember that, correct me now if I'm wrong, but in the Midwest, which is where I heard this in Detroit, Young Winter Brown was on the late afternoon NBC lineup along with Stella Dallas and Just Plain Bill and Portia Faces Life.
Well, it's Portia Faces Life, not Just Plain Bill. Just Plain Bill was on early in the day.
Was.
Yes. It was one of the morning shows.
But Wendy Warren, and I remember Wendy Warren, CBS, is that right?
Right.
And as I recall, it either followed or preceded a show, which I think I'm the only one who remembers, called Grand Slam with Irene Beasley. Do you remember that?
Yeah, but
it was before Kate Smith.
Well, we took it. You see, Wendy came into the Kate Smith spot.
Uh-huh.
Wendy, Kate Smith left the network when Wendy, you know, was launched at 12 noon.
I'm going, after this program, I'm going out to the West Coast for a while. Tell the listeners a few of the people I'm going to be visiting with. One is Claudia Morgan, who I'm going to do before I leave,
please.
Who said to say hello. Claudia Morgan was Nora Charles on The Thin Man for many years on radio. And I'm going to be talking with Glenda Farrell and with Lon McAllister and Harold Lloyd and Mary Beth Hughes and Wanda Hendricks. And then we'll come back here to New York.
Well, isn't that exciting?
It is for me.
That's wonderful. Give Claudia my love.
I shall.
She's just great.
I've been talking today with Miss Florence Freeman, who was the actress on the very well-remembered radio soap opera in the late afternoon NBC lineup during the 1930s and 40s and right into the 50s, called Young Widder Brown. And I want to thank her for being here and thank you for listening. Until next week at the same time, this is Richard Lamparski. Good night.